The Learn Me Something Podcast with your hosts, Aaron Stewart and Rich Plum.
All right, everyone. Welcome to the Learn Me Something Podcast. It is Tuesday or so.
Is it Tuesday today?
I believe it is a Tuesday. Yes. Normally, we record on a Monday. That's why this was significant.
But we always come out on a Friday.
But we always, yes. Luckily, our producer is way ahead of us.
He's very diligent with his editing of our garbage.
Thank God one of us is.
He makes us sound actually listenable. Thank you, Alex.
Compared to the normal gibberish that comes out of my mouth as usual. Anyway, so we want to welcome everybody to the episode today. The title of which I think I'm going to go with The Art of Breathing.
The Art of Breathing.
Indeed. I figured we'd been doing some pretty hefty subjects over the past little while, so I wanted to do something that was just nice and light and just something that we could maybe just, you know, learn something about without having to be all depressed.
I love breathing. I do it all the time.
Well, and a lot of us don't recognize just quite the significance of it, right? The simple fact that you know, everything that we are kind of hinges on breathing.
Yeah, I mean, we all have to do it, right?
Exactly.
Like, you can't not breathe.
In fact, it's mostly unconscious.
Yeah, and the unbreathing's unconscious, yeah.
Yeah.
Because you're sleeping, right? Or...
Well, in general, it's mostly, like, you don't have to think about breathing, right? It's only, like, you can take control of your breathing for singing or swimming or something like that. But in general, it's your
just
brain...
Just automatic thing.
There's actually a part of your brain that regulates the amount of carbon dioxide versus the amount of oxygen in your blood, and that's what actually regulates the amount of breathing you do.
That tells you how much you have to breathe. I think it's always amazing how, I mean, I have kids, you have kids, you were there, you saw the first breath.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing how the body just clicks into that, right?
Like, and
just
how all it of just a sudden kinda knows.
Yeah, that, it just knows.
That's what you got to do.
Got slapped in my ass, it's time to start breathing. They didn't do the slapping on the ass with my kids. They
really?
Did the, no, they did the sucker or the suction thing in the mouth.
Oh, where they just pull a bit of
and all of a sudden they started crying.
Yeah,
it's like
they
crazy.
Just clear out the stuff inside them.
How does that happen? How does it just like boom?
And you wonder how much of it is actually like a pre-programmed, like is part of the brain... The whole time you're growing inside of your womb, you know, going, where's the air? Where's the air? When do I get to breathe? When do I get to breathe? Or you know, is it only when you're pulled out of it that you instinctively
start breathing? You know what it is? It is, thank you, God and Jesus Christ, for this blessed gift of breathing that they have bestowed upon us.
Well, yeah, I don't know if I subscribe to that name in particular for whatever, you know, deity forum you may choose that I think is going to be one of our upcoming episodes is just theism in general and
that'll be like a five-parter
different
we, did that one.
We could go on and on just about the different kinds of ways that people have bowed down to an invisible nothing
or an invisible something depending
or an invisible
on your
something yes I suppose yes
we don't know maybe not I'm not an agnostic. I have to take a firm stance on things. And I am an atheist. Mm-hmm. You know, I think agnostics are a bit of a douchebags because pick a side, goddamn it. Not one or the other. Like,
yeah,
pick
you
something.
Can't just say that there's just nothing.
Maybe
right?
there is. Maybe there's not. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, whatever.
Jim Jefferies has a good bit on that.
Yeah, actually, I heard that one too.
Yeah, breathing.
Breathing, yes. So all animals actually need oxygen for cellular respiration. So the oxygen is what the body uses to break down foods for energy, and it produces carbon dioxide as a waste, right? So none of the energy requirements of your body would be possible without oxygen going into your blood.
Sure. Yeah, that's what the lungs do, right? You deep big breath in, all the oxygen goes in, makes that blood nice and red, distributes to your body so you can move all sexy-like, like I am now.
Well, and that was one of the questions that I had was why oxygen instead of, you know, because the atmosphere is actually mostly nitrogen, right? And I found an interesting bit on it about how oxygen is a very high energy chemical, whereas nitrogen is a very low energy chemical.
Energy isn't how? Is it got a lot of potential in it?
Stored energy, exactly.
Okay, sure.
Let alone that oxygen reacts a lot more readily than nitrogen does.
Okay, right? Like a battery almost. like stores it up.
Yeah,
gives the power ready to go.
Sort of. Whereas nitrogen requires another object in order to react with and to release the stored energy from that. Oxygen has that energy stored up, and so it releases that energy when it reacts with something else.
Okay, sure. So like an evolutionary trait that developed, and that's why we breathe oxygen.
More of a fact that because oxygen reacts the way it does, our bodies evolved in order to use it this way.
Okay.
Sure. Because it was kind of the most efficient. There's actually a surplus of oxygen technically, right? Compared to what there was before. And so we're kind of just using up the extra oxygen that's been produced by all the plants.
Okay, so there's more oxygen. You're saying there's more oxygen now than there was?
Oh, definitely.
Like when? Back in 100 years ago?
Back in the primordial days, it was a completely different atmospheric structure than we have now.
Interesting, because I would say, you think with the destruction of the forest and the decrease of people and whatnot.
There's been more carbon dioxide pumped into the air now from industrialization, yes. But in terms of the amount of just general oxygen in the air and the atmosphere in general, back in the day, there was not this amount of oxygen. And most of the animals lived off of a different combination of.
Really? Right?
Yeah.
Fascinating.
Indeed. And so we've evolved to use oxygen specifically because of its high energy content.
Okay, sure. I grasp that. I mean, fish, back to primitive fish, the prehistoric fish.
Prehistoric, yeah.
The dinosaur fish. Mm-hmm. They breathe oxygen, right?
Well, see, and
like
that's
fish breathe oxygen.
All animals, like all vertebrates except for fish, have the same kind of respiratory cycle where we breathe in, we breathe out, right? Whereas fish do it differently by I believe it's more of a diffusion through the water, because they're not actually breathing air, they're breathing water. So,
but the oxygen in the water, though, right?
Exactly, but it's a different kind of process than extracting oxygen from air.
Sure, sure. I know fish breathe oxygen because I made the mistake one time of putting some fish into a tank and I didn't oxygenate it.
Well, that's why they have red blood.
Yeah.
Right. It's the same with all of it. Like the oxygen is technically, actually it's the iron, I think, that makes it red technically.
But I thought
the oxygen, I believe, reacting with the iron, maybe?
I don't know. All I know is red blood means oxygenated
blood.
Oh, God,
now we got to do a podcast on blood
cells.
Because
when you cut yourself, it's always red because it's interacting with the oxygen. But before
that,
it's purple.
Again, right? And
not the iron. Thank you.
Yeah.
Let's go with the oxygen.
Sure,
make
we'll go
a
with the oxygen.
Firm stance, like the atheists or the Christians. Firm stance on things. No agnostics here.
It's definitely not the nitrogen. We'll go with that. So again, it seems to me more like an evolutionary thing where this worked out, and especially with photosynthesis as well. Oxygen reacts better with the plants in order to convert carbohydrates into a usable energy source for us. So it seems to be more of kind of an evolutionary trait that we actually use oxygen versus all of the other gases. So we're breathing in all of these other gases, but we're actually just breathing most of it back out.
Right, yeah. So wonder if there's like an alien world where they breathe like...
Oh, for sure.
Lava or
something. That I can tell you is a definite
crazy.
Yes.
Lava? They breathe lava?
That I totally believe in. I don't necessarily believe in God, but I totally believe that there's other planets out there where there's all sorts of other crap going on that we're just going to be like, wow, we couldn't even have imagined that life would have taken that particular combination.
Yeah.
Right?
Could you think, all the things out there. I mean, probably even like they breathe like a compound or a chemical or something that we don't even know yet.
The number of different species on this planet, the variety of places that we've found life, like down in the bottom of the ocean where the volcanic vents, and they say, it's way too hot for anything to live down there. No, look at that. There's all sorts of different kinds of bacterial life and different crabs and lobsters that are just feeding off of all the stuff around there. It's crazy. Just the variety that we have here.
Yeah.
Begs that there's got to be other stuff out there, right?
It'd be crazy day once we actually do. Can you imagine the day that we actually like definitively prove that there's life on another planet? How awesome that would be.
They've been finding so many more planets on and on. Now that they've gotten better at spotting
the Kepler thing
and finding like the techniques for like spotting when it orbits the sun, so they can spot the actual dimming of a planet a thousandth of the size of the sun or the star that it's passing in front of. They can spot that dim through the telescopes now, right? And they have algorithms that allow them to track that without having to actually sit and watch it. And it, they have computers that just sit and wait for that star to just dim just a tiny little bit.
And one of those planets out there, they're breathing lava. I want to go to that planet, but I'm not going to breathe the lava.
You probably wouldn't want to go to that
planet.
Not going to
breathe the lava, but I'll go.
That would be tough to breathe the lava. Yes, yes. Unless it was highly oxygen. I don't know. I got nothing. The lungs actually aren't capable of expanding themselves. So, and that's where, you know, again, it was talking about how it's a subconscious breathing itself is not actually, it's run by a part of the brain called the, if I can find it here, the control of the actual amount of oxygen versus carbon dioxide in your blood is sensed by the central blood gas chemoreceptors on the surface of the medulla oblongata.
That's in the brain, isn't it?
That is a part of the brain, indeed.
So you knew that.
Yes. So part of your brain actually senses the amount of oxygen in your blood and uses that to regulate how much you should be breathing. So the rate that you breathe, the depth that you should be breathing, right? Mm-hmm. And there's actually an optimal breath rate that we'll get to later. It's called eupnea, eunia.
Yeah, okay. I've never heard of that before.
Yeah, I hadn't either, actually. And it's a Greek term, I believe, for meaning the, you know, optimal breathing pattern, right? Because, again, because your body uses the oxygen in order to do all of the, most of the, like, metabolic processes, it needs to be able to, and also oxygen is, I believe, acidic?
Like rusting it, exactly. Right? It's oxidizing it.
So in order to regulate the pH of the blood, it needs to bring in the oxygen versus the carbon dioxide, and it regulates it with those two things.
Two things. Two thingers. Two hickeys.
I'm going, not chemicals, not... work with me here.
Do the doohickeys, I like that. The doohickeys.
Those two chemical doohickeys work together to regulate the pH of the blood. Boy, we're sounding like a couple of geniuses on this one.
What's that thingamabobber?
breathing lava and the chemical thingamajigger oxygen. All right, thanks for tuning in, everyone.
Learned that in college, I did.
Yeah. All that college we did. Anyway, so automatic breathing can be overridden to a limited extent by a simple choice. So by you can actually make the choice of breathing more or taking deep breaths, you know, for swimming, singing, blah, 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 blah.
Right.
It is impossible to suppress the urge to breathe to the point of hypoxia, killing yourself.
Yeah, I know that.
But training can increase the ability to breath hold. For example, in February 2016, a Spanish professional free diver broke the world record for holding the breath underwater at just over, and take a guess. Take a guess at how long he held his breath underwater for.
10 minutes.
Higher.
No way.
Dude.
Wait, actually, I think I know this. I saw a video on this, this stuff is crazy.
I cannot even imagine
15
this.
Minutes?
No.
How long?
Higher.
How? Tell me.
24 minutes.
24 minutes, no breath.
24 minutes underwater.
You know,
he held his breath and he did not die.
This is crazy because I saw I was watching a documentary on this and I feel bad because I should have known this, but I was watching this documentary on the deep sea diving, like the one breath thing. And it's insane. It's completely insane. They have to do a test when they get to the top. Like some guy, to break the record, you have to go down and then come back up, but you have to do a certain thing. You have to take off your goggles, say your name and the date or something like that. It's three things you have to do.
To make sure that you're actually, that your brain's working, is still working. Still.
Yeah. And some guy went, I remember watching, some guy went like, broke the record. I think it was more than 24, whatever the record was.
This was the world record but some guy broke it. 2016. So this might be the same guy.
Maybe, but someone broke the record, but he got up and he said his name first and then took the goggles off. And because he did it in that order, they disqualified the,
you're kidding me.
Yeah, seriously. So this guy like trained and went down and broke the record, came up.
For months.
And because he took his goggles off or said his name first and then took his goggles off, they were like, no, because they're saying your brain's not working because that's part of the training is you have to know
that's,
the order.
That's about where my brain would stop working and my arms would start swinging.
And there was
I just held my breath for 24 minutes and you just...
Can you imagine that? Like there was one guy...
I can't even.
I know, I'd be so pissed off.
Oh my God.
But one guy went down there, he came up and he did it. He passed it, but then he died after. He died like 10 minutes later when the cardiac arrest or stroke or something like that.
Well, and that... Because when you go down that deep, the air pressure forces and your body reacts in a different way, and that's another like atmospheric changes have a lot of influence on how your body reacts to air in general.
Yeah, right? Aaron, I can get to a 6 foot deep end of the pool underwater before that's it for me. Like my head starts feeling like it's being crushed and I'm like 6 feet under and I'm watching these guys like go like, what are they doing? Like 100 meters or something? Like, and they're going like fast. It's like almost like a full sprint. Like imagine full sprint without taking a breath for 24 minutes. Are you serious? Like who, I want to know like why, like name. Okay. If you had not read that article, name the person that holds a world record for that.
Nobody going to look up his name of the guy that actually holds the record. And actually
nobody knows that.
So as there's less oxygen in the air, the pressure in the lungs also decreases at the same rate with the altitude. So a pressure differential is still required to drive air into and out of the lungs as it is at sea level. So the mechanism for breathing at altitude is essentially identical to breathing at sea level, but with differences such as the atmospheric pressure decreases exponentially with altitude, roughly halving with every 5,500 meters or 1,800 feet in altitude. So the people living on the top of, say, I guess Everest, nobody lives there.
Do people live up there?
No, nobody lives up there, but there are people that live up, I believe, in Peru.
Yeah, the Alps are like mountains.
Like
the Dalai Lama, and whatnot, lives up in
the top of the highest mountain.
I'm being very ignorant right now because I don't know what that is.
Well, Tibet. I'm sure there's many, many mountainous places in the world where people live.
And they live up in the mountains, like Switzerland or whatever. Probably, I think. I feel like there's mountains there.
Yeah,
the Alps, I think. I've seen Sound of Music.
Those are mountains, yes, and I believe.
Sound of Music. I don't even know if that Sound of Music is in Switzerland.
I believe that was the Alps, yes. We're showing our... See, this is where this whole thing is a celebration of our ignorance. And so you get to celebrate our ignorance with us. I'm sure all of you are screaming at your...
Sound of Music was in Switzerland, wasn't it? No, it wasn't.
I believe there are German Alps, and I believe it might be.
No, Switzerland wasn't Germany. So our Sound of Music was not in Germany because Germany invaded and they were going to force everyone into the army.
And maybe
it was the Alps, or the Switzerland.
Yeah.
Or Denmark.
I seem to remember something about them fleeing to Switzerland or something, maybe.
They had to cross the Alps for sure. And they had to breathe a certain way because they were at an elevated state.
they were at altitude.
Yeah, and they had to.
See, it's all related, goddammit.
Their breath was deeper.
Yes, yes. Well, actually, because the oxygen is lower, so the composition of atmospheric air is, however, almost constant below 80 kilometers.
Sorry, say it again?
So the atmospheric pressure decreases half with every 18,000 feet.
Okay.
Okay? But the composition of air is still basically the same. So while there's less pressure, the oxygen level is still the same.
Okay.
Right? So amount of oxygen versus the amount of nitrogen, the composition of air
is
itself
the same?
Doesn't change, I believe, or changes very little, or remains constant below 80 kilometers as a result of a continuous mixing effect of the weather.
Okay, so if you go up, because I always thought that
airplane. That was entirely my bad.
Okay.
The concentration of oxygen in the air therefore decreases at the same rate as the atmospheric pressure. So below 80 kilometers, it stays constant because there's constant air flow.
Okay.
It's moving all the time. Whereas above, there isn't necessarily the same kind of winds going on. And so it doesn't, decrease.
Yeah, okay.
By the same
I was going to say, because I thought up higher, all like, right. You'll die. That's why they wore the, when the bombers and guys.
Well, see, and I was thinking that
it
was something to do with the pressure of it. With less pressure, there's less oxygen because the pressure is less, right? So we're probably both kind of right.
Yeah.
In the fact that there would be less oxygen technically because with less pressure, there's a less concentration of the gas, air.
That makes sense to me.
So there would be less air technically to breathe because there's less pressure pushing.
So like in World War II, when those B-52 bombers are going bombing, you see the movies and stuff, and they're all wearing the oxygen mask because they get up over a certain height.
Yeah, there's no oxygen.
And they're freezing too. I mean, they're wearing
no pressure pushing the oxygen into their lungs, maybe. Maybe that's the issue. But so at the summit of Mount Everest, at 29,000 feet, oxygen still contributes 21% of the atmosphere.
And what's the number on like where we are right now? It's not over 50, is it? Because I know there's a lot of nitrogen in the oxygen. or in the
air? Well, see, again, no, it's about 21. So normal composition of air is basically 78% on nitrogen, 20% oxygen. And small amounts, including argon, carbon dioxide, neon, helium, and hydrogen.
So when
you actually exhale, you actually have 4 to 5% more volume of carbon dioxide and 4 to 5% less volume of oxygen.
Yeah, but there's still oxygen in there because that's why you can do CPR
versus the
20%, and whatnot.
Now you've got 16 kind of thing.
Yeah, because when you're doing CPR and you got to blow into someone's mouth.
Yeah, there is.
You know, there's still oxygen in there. I mean, not as much. You're stealing 5%, but you still have some coming
out.
But
that's how they know that oxygen. That's how they figured out that oxygen was what our body was using for those processes.
Right.
They you know, took a breath in and they knew what oxygen or what air, the composition of air was. Mm-hmm. And so they just had someone breathe into a bag and they tested the composition. They found that it was 5% less oxygen and 5% more carbon dioxide.
Yeah.
So they knew that that was the reaction that was taking place inside the body, was that the oxygen was reacting and carbon dioxide was the byproduct.
I'm curious about that. I don't know if you know it, but when did that study happen? I mean, how long have we known about oxygen?
I'm pretty sure they've known that, because that seems like a pretty simple test that they
could
have done.
Like a Plato type of thing? And probably 1800s,
maybe. I wouldn't put it past them. You know,
I wonder.
They were using general air, like pneumatics, for toys and such back in those days.
You know what? Yeah, because the first hot air balloons that they tested back in, I think it was like the 1600s or something. Mm. It's only going up like 1,000 feet or so, but they put a duck, a goat, and something else in a basket and took it up to see if it would survive, because they didn't know if there was oxygen
high. They didn't want to send a person up there first.
They took a goat because it was most likely a human lungs, and they took a bird because birds fly up there.
Yeah.
And then something else.
So they wanted to see which one would survive the whole...
Yeah.
Right?
So and it was only 1,000 feet up.
They knew the bird would be able to breathe the air, at least, and they didn't know if all the other ones would be able to. Yeah.
Interesting, right?
Yeah, because they didn't
know.
Awesome,
so
actually.
I wonder when they thought, like, when did someone say... I don't even know. Like, when did someone say, hey, oxygen, that's the shit, man.
And again, because it's such a fundamental thing to our whole existence, you know, that seems like a philosophical, right? Like, you know, you talk about the breath of life, right? Like when you give someone CPR, when you're giving them mouth to mouth, you're breathing life into them, because oxygen and breath, that's one of our four main vital signs, right?
Yeah.
So as we mentioned, when you're at the top of the Mount Everest, you do actually have to inhale a greater volume of air than at sea level in order to breathe in the same amount of oxygen in a given period. So because the pressure is less, the oxygen technically is still in the air, but the pressure is less, so you have to breathe in more of it in order to get the same amount of oxygen that you would get at sea level.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, it kind of makes sense. Again, if you get less pressure above there, there's going to be less for you to actual. So, yeah.
Oxygen was discovered in 1772 by Joseph Priestley and Carl William Scheele.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of like the chemical oxygen as we know it. They were the first to actually isolate it, weren't they? Or?
From the Greek words oxy and genus, which together mean acid forming. Say what? Oxygen is pronounced oxygen, just like I just said it. Oxygen had been produced by several chemists prior to the discovery in 1774, but they failed to recognize it as a distinct element. Joseph Priestley and Carl Wilhelm Scheele both independently discovered oxygen, but Priestley is usually given credit for the discovery. They were both able to produce oxygen by heating oxide. So until 1772, so what did they think beforehand?
Like, well, it was probably just that they had no way of separating it. So they knew
air.
They probably, exactly. They just thought that air was air, and they didn't realize that it was actually a composition
made up of
a bunch of different chemicals until then.
Huh. That's interesting stuff, man.
Well, and oxygen, because it reacts so quickly, it might have been something that they may have actually, you know, separated out, but they hadn't actually captured or had been able to get to an actual, like, you know, separate from all other chemicals it could react with.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. So we've gone up to the top of Mount Everest, and now, as we were talking about the free diver, like 24 minutes, that's still, it blows my mind. 24 minutes he was underwater.
I can do about 45 seconds.
I was actually a provincial champion speed swimmer.
No way, yeah.
Back in the day, the 14 to 15 year old boy, me.
How long could you hold your breath for?
I used to be able to do a length and a half of a 25 meter pool.
So what? That's like over a minute.
About a minute and a half. Yeah.
Everyone at home, hold your breath. We'll wait. See how long. See how long you can go.
Yeah. Okay,
I can't go very long at all.
Let's give it a minute of silence.
Go now and start. All right. How are you guys doing? Okay. I can't go that long. Yeah.
Okay. Was that a minute? I think that was at least.
That was a minute and a half. I'd say. Feels pretty good about that.
5-10 minutes. But 24 minutes. I mean, we've been talking. We're at 40 minutes on this right now. I don't know if that's where we actually are in the actual edited version of this. But we've been running this for 40 minutes now, and the idea that someone can hold their breath
for half of that
is
almost more than half of that.
Well, and you know, where were we before? Like, what was the previous world record, and how is that? Like, I'd like to see the progression of how this world record has been broken. Like, what was the very first world record set for being able to hold your breath underwater?
Minute and a half.
I wouldn't doubt it. I wouldn't doubt that at some point 3 minutes was you know, absolutely inhuman for someone to ever imagine being able to hold your breath for 3 minutes underwater without dying was crazy.
I mean, everything progresses. Have you seen like the videos of like the first Olympics? The gymnasts where they do like one cartwheel.
Yeah, exactly.
Now they're doing like triple axles.
Oh my God, she did a backflip? Wow, that's crazy.
Yeah, like when someone on the horse, what do they call the, I think they're
pummel
called
horse.
The, yeah, where they're running up and they're jumping and they do like literally one flip.
Yeah,
like that's it.
The progression of humanity. Hey?
We don't know for sure.
We've been able to hold our breath longer and longer.
All we know, first one was like 20 minutes
or something. And that's without any gas or anything. Like most people, when they go diving, they carry a mixture of gases around. And the other thing being that as you go under, there's the bends, right? Like the nitrogen, I believe, forces itself or solidifies almost in the blood, and it doesn't. And so if you come up too quickly, the pressure forces your body out of,
you can actually
kill yourself.
You're talking about divers going down deep and then coming up, right? Yeah, that's just the pressure in their, they got to take certain, and that's why I'm never going scuba diving. I'm sorry. Like, I'm sure it's super fun and everything, but I'm not doing that because I can't, I get freaked out when like, you know, I don't want to explode, you know? What I'm saying? Like, I don't know if I would explode, but I don't.
I do have a phobia of deep water that I can't see down to the bottom of. And being a decent swimmer, that was always still kind of my, right? Like, if I can't see the bottom of it, I just, right?
It's freaky, right?
Well, and one of the, I grew up in Saskatchewan. And so we had Nickel Lake. And it was a foot of water and 3 feet of mud. And if you, right, and you couldn't see your hand right in front of your face. Yeah. And we had to go swim out, you know, probably half a kilometer to this little island that was out there. And by the time we got back, we were all covered in leeches and the whole. And so that might be part of why I have that fear of.
I think everyone does. I mean,
I'm sure there's
over and it's like all of a sudden like. You just can't think about it like, okay, there's stuff under me. Like there's a whale under me somewhere and I can't even see it.
There's a shark right under me. He's just coming up underneath
Stingray
me.
Or something.
Yeah, Jaws is on his way. You can just hear that music as you go, doo-doo.
Ever see that movie, like Deep Water, where the two people get stranded out in the, they were scuba diving and they came up and their boat had left them and they're just like out in the middle of nowhere. They forgot about it. Yeah, sharks. Yeah, and they die. Someone got eaten and bled out.
See, that's, you know, you look at the statistics of the number of people that are actually eaten by sharks per year, and you know that, you know, it's not very high, right? You know, and the number of people that actually die from, you know, not very high.
Yeah. A lot of people die from drowning, though.
A lot of people die from drowning.
Yep.
Lack of breathing.
Yeah. Breathing's important, people. Make sure you continually do it.
Exactly. So, which brings us to respiratory disorders, of which there's lots, right?
Sure.
I, for one, have a bit of asthma. I don't know if it's maybe a allergic reaction to things in the air or something, maybe. But ever since I moved to Vancouver, lovely Vancouver where we are right now.
Is that right? You get asthma from... Yeah, really?
Yeah, I don't know what exactly brings that on. I haven't gone to the doctor to... He just kind of gave me the antihistamines to
deal with it.
But yeah, well, you know. It's usually when the cottonwood fluff is floating. So I can probably tie it down to that one.
Yeah, I mean, there's lots of disorders, right?
Like, indeed.
Like,
indeed.
Well, I'll let you go through them.
Well, you know, there's sleep apnea. That's one where
that's a scary one.
That's a pretty scary one. That's where you actually stop breathing.
Yeah, while you're sleeping.
While you're sleeping.
Yeah. I know some people that have to. I know some people that have that. They got to wear that little mask.
Get a mask that actually regulates the amount of oxygen going into.
I'm curious as to how people get diagnosed with that. Because,
well, I think most of it comes from having, you know, a married partner that tells you that, you know,
if you're not married, you're screwed.
You stopped breathing for 3 minutes last night. I was pushing you, and you.
Honestly, Aaron, if my wife stopped breathing, I probably wouldn't notice. You know what I'm saying?
I sleep like the dead.
I wouldn't be like a dead sleep, and all of a sudden, like,
until the next morning when I woke up and went, "Hey, what?"
Yeah, that's what I would notice. You stopped breathing last night.
You stopped breathing, and you're still not breathing. Okay, that's not
like, seriously, if my wife stopped breathing, I wouldn't wake up and be like, "Hey, you're not breathing." Like, I wouldn't even freaking know.
There's no alarm bells that go off when somebody.
There's got to be some. Let's do a pod on that.
Here. Well, I think a lot of it is kind of tied to the snoring and that kind of thing. Like there's I think signs that lead to.
Yeah.
It also, because when you stop breathing, I think a lot of it is tied to not getting a decent rest. So if you're sleeping, but you're not getting rest.
I know a lot of heavier people.
A month or two, right? Yeah.
Heavier people have a hard time with that.
I think that's, yeah.
Too much weight on their lungs.
Yeah, that's part of it. And I think it's just the added, you know, it shifts your body as you're laying down, right? Mm-hmm. So you're in a different position than you would be if you were, you know, not in the...
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay, what other ones are there?
Well, there's stridor, which I've
never heard of that one.
I hadn't either, and I'm apparently offline here, so I can't even look that one up.
Stridor, though.
Yeah.
Everyone Google that at home.
Everyone
see what stridor
up.
Is about.
Tell you guys, tell us. Please teach us something about stridor.
But, Facebook, you know, at learn me something on Facebook.
But there's also there's physiological and also psychological disorders. There's hyponia, which is a technical term used to describe physiological slow and shallow breathing. Hypernia is a technical term used to describe fast and deep breathing brought on by like exercise and such. There's hypoventilation and hyperventilation for shallow and fast breathing. But there's also like diseases that can bring on, say, if you have a injury to the medulla oblongata, which regulates it, that can throw off your pH balance. So your brain wouldn't be able to regulate that pH balance as well. And so you would have troubles being able to regulate the amount of carbon dioxide that you would need to take in order to, you know, continue your metabolic process.
I know what stridor is.
Oh, you do? Excellent.
I do. Stridor.
We can edit out that part where we didn't know anything and we were completely ignorant.
Interesting you brought up stridor because stridor
is one of those respiratory diseases that I was going to talk about, but thank God you know all about it.
Yeah, stridor is a high-pitched wheezing sound caused by a disrupted airflow. Stridor may also be called musical breathing or a long word, extrathoracic airway obstruction. Airway flow is usually disrupted.
Is that separate from asthma? Because I know asthma has a wheezing that's kind of a characteristic
it's just,
of asthma.
Yeah, they said it could be caused by an injury.
Mm-hmm.
Could be caused by allergic reaction. From coughing.
Closing off of the air passageways.
Bronchitis. Other large words that have multiple syllables in them. Inhaling objects such as peanuts or marble. Marble?
Marbles.
Huh. No, it says marble. Not marbles, marble.
Hmm. Yeah, I suppose a marble would be enough to
inhale
block.
A marble? My God.
Yeah. Ouch.
Jeez. My daughter once ate a piece of a game, like a sorry game, those little, swallowed it, ate it.
Kids with eat the darndest things.
Well, she plays with stuff in her mouth and she swallowed it and she starts freaking out.
And they go, "What's the problem with having stuff in my mouth?" Well, because you keep swallowing it.
I know. Then she's like, freaks out. And my wife's like, "What happened? What'd you do?" She's like, "Nothing." And I'm like, she's like, "What did you do?" It's like, "I swallowed a game piece. We had to take her to the hospital, get x-rays." That's the whole thing. Kids, man.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey.
She didn't get stridor though.
Yeah. Well, there you go. Yes.
Emphysema.
Emphysema, yeah.
That's a bad one. I used to do sales down in Florida, and we sold vacuums back then, water filtration systems. So I went into a lot of old people's homes, and a lot of times, especially with the vacuums, because it was a filter queen, good vacuum, also doubles as an air filtration unit.
Mm.
And how many people that I went and saw were like the husband was, or the wife, but usually the husband, lying in the bed, attached to a machine, like unable to breathe, have emphysema. Man, if you smoke, like stop. Look at somebody and that, one time on emphysema and think that may be me at some point. Like breathing is so important.
Yeah.
Like I was watching a thing on the tsunamis that happened in Chris on Boxing Day.
Yeah.
What was that, 2003 or 2002, something like that? Long time ago.
Sure, yeah.
About that, around there. I can't remember exactly. But I was watching a documentary on it later about this family where the daughter died. Six-year-old, her young girl. And the mother, what stuck with me is the mother said, you know, we got stuck. They were in a stairwell or something. They got stuck. Water came in and the mother couldn't start breathing. She went through that panic, that panic that happens when you can't breathe. And her daughter died. And she kept thinking like, I can't, like my daughter, like I was going through that. I survived like, cause I don't know how, but she survived. But she thought, man, my daughter didn't go. My daughter had to experience that, had to experience that fear that, and that is, I mean, like not breathing, like my son just today had an allergic reaction to something at the park and we had to take him to the doctor and the doctor was concerned and said, you know what, everything's fine, but he is getting, everything's swelling up in his face and he may, you know, there's a chance that his throat could swell up. So I'm going to prescribe to you an EpiPen. So we went to the pharmacy, got an EpiPen. And my son was asking questions about it because he looked at it like, that's going to hurt if that goes in. Like, is that, I'm like, if this goes into you, your airway's clogged, and trust me, you're not going to know that this went into you. You're going to be freaking out because you're not going to be able to breathe. And if you're not being able to breathe, is like that panic that sets in, right? That,
yes, exactly.
That primal, and I must protect my, like just that sheer panic. I mean, drowning has got to be the worst death. I can't think of a worse death. Maybe fire?
Well, they say that that's actually one of the more calm ways to go, because you know,
I want
to
say
apparently there's a euphoria that settles in, like you have that initial panic, but then I guess when your brain finally, I guess there's a euphoria, I mean, versus fire, which would be just pain and all of your nerves on, right?
Okay, so I saw a video of a guy who had one of those like GoPro cams or something on his head while he was scuba diving. He died during it, and there was people that were watching the video to kind of see what happened because that doesn't get captured a lot, like a scuba diver diving. So he was going on to do a body recovery of, and it was an underground like
cave. So he was teaching a scuba diving
class? No, he was going to do a body recovery. Like someone had died scuba diving and he was going to go down and recover the body. And he had the thing on his head and you see him above and he goes underwater and he's got to go, and it's not very far. Like the whole video was like maybe 15 minutes.
But if that person had died down there, then there was a reason they died.
And he had a guide rope and everything. But and you got to watch it on YouTube. You know, I don't know what you would look up, guy dives scuba diving. But he goes down there, and there's a guide rope there, but he gets disoriented. And some guy was saying, like, how fast he was going was like being in a full sprint. So being in a full sprint for 15 minutes. And then I don't know what happened, if he used too much oxygen or whatnot, but he just got turned around. He couldn't figure it out. You see, like, you don't see him die. Like, you see his perspective. You see his hands and stuff. But he's panicking, man. It's like a scary, and people watching this are like, just looks on their face like, oh my God, like, wow, this is like deep stuff. Even there was a girl that did like the Houdini. I'm going to go into the water and be submerged.
Chained up.
And yeah, and she couldn't get out. And you see her like literally drowned.
See, and I'd watched a Penn and Teller one where they did that or something, and it was one of those magicians, and basically the show ended with them still in it after they had gone like, oh, he's way past what, oh my God, he must be, right? And so it was like 5 minutes of him being underwater, and they're going, oh my God, he must be dead now. Oh my, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? And then cut. Yeah.
Is that right? Well, that's just cruel.
Exactly.
But this one.
But it was brilliant, right? Like, and then he came back next week, right? And it was just like, wait, what?
But this one, the girl was in a clear like glass cylinder, and she was in there, and you could see her. Like she starts like, and her feet all curl up, and she's all like spasming and stuff, and everyone runs up to pull her out. I mean it.
Well, and that's after 5 minutes of no oxygen, your brain actually dies.
Yeah,
and that's the problem, right? Like, oxygen, that's why you have to breathe oxygen into them. Like, they're now with CPR, they're more concerned with pumping the blood because that carries the oxygen, but you need to have oxygen going into your brain, or your brain actually just, like, that's when you start to die, essentially. Mm-hmm. Like, that's the actual, like, when, that's one of the again, the four vital signs is one of them. Yeah. is blood pressure, mm-hmm. you know, and then there's brain activity.
Yeah, they even now they have a thing that tests the oxygen level in the blood. Mm-hmm. You know, which is, thank God for modern medicine. But the drowning thing.
We're not burying people who are
yeah.
not actually dead.
But the drowning, I mean, that's a scary thing. I mean, just, that's why you got to watch your kids or whatnot in a pool. I saw another video online where a five-year-old kid was in a pool, crowded pool, a bunch mm-hmm. of people just as a party. But he got in there
and
just too far.
Nobody's paying attention.
Yeah, he drowned. Like, he didn't die. Like, but you could see him. Like, he, again, the same thing, the spasms and the whatnot. And an adult's like a few feet away, not realizing the kid's drowning. And then all of a sudden, oh, crap. Mm-hmm. Someone goes over, pulls him out. And, you know, like, it can happen so fast. I mm-hmm. mean, like, how long can a regular person hold their breath for? Mm-hmm. 45 seconds for me, then I'm going to start drowning.
yeah. And if, as long as you're longer. Pulled out before 5 minutes past that, then you should be okay, right?
Yeah, maybe.
But, yeah. So the word spirit actually comes from Latin spiritus, meaning breath. So the word spirit, like your spirit, your soul, all that kind of stuff is tied in with breath.
Okay.
Right. And breathing in general. Yeah. They recognized early on that was, you know, you're when you're born, like you said, you get that
you
smack
breathe
on the butt.
In and then
and that's your first breath that they thought was what actually animated your body mm-hmm. kind of thing.
That's right? Your spirit coming in, your first breath.
Exactly.
Take it in, like,
exactly.
Floating around trying to find a vessel. Interesting.
So, and actually the Bible actually refers to God breathing the breath of life into clay to make Adam a living soul. So it was actually the breath of God that gave us a soul, technically in the Hebrew Bible, right? It also refers to the breath as returning to God when a mortal dies. So that breath of life that we're given apparently returns back to God when we die. And that's
your
kind
final
of our
breath.
Yeah, right. So that's the continuation of the cycle, I guess, right? So that breath goes back, he breathes it into someone else, and that the cycle continues, right? So I guess that might be the version of the Buddhist reincarnation, where technically that energy is reabsorbed and then re-spat
so
out as a different
a
different person kind of thing, right? Mm-hmm. So you're put into a different body. So Tai Chi, an aerobic exercise, use breathing exercises to strengthen the diaphragm muscles, improving posture and making better use of the body's qi. Now qi is kind of the Chinese term for energy, right? And so I might actually do an episode on kind of the
qi.
Yeah, because there's the idea that, you know, you can actually move that energy around your body. Right. And kind of harness it and use it to be able to, I guess, focus and more kind of use your energy productively versus just kind of, you know, throwing it out in general. Right. So what is the proper way of breathing? Right. Because there's lots of consequences of bad breathing.
Yeah.
Right. Because again, if you think about it, your body relies on that oxygen. Yeah. So if you're taking short, shallow breaths all the time,
especially
your body
when working
isn't
out,
getting.
Yeah,
exactly. So when, you know, again, your body is kind of regulating that for you, but because you do have some limited control over it, if you are using that control in a bad way and using it to, you know, in breathing into your shoulders instead of because again, your lungs don't expand by themselves. You actually have to kind of do it for them. So you actually expanding your diaphragm, which increases the volume of the lungs, which is technically what you're doing when you breathe in. Mm-hmm. So then your chest expands and that allows the air to move into it. If you didn't have that movement of your chest, there would be no volume and nowhere for the air to go, right? So you wouldn't actually be able to breathe in general.
I know that's true. I mean, I work out, so I know, and I do a lot of cardio or try to do a lot of cardio, but I have never been really great at it. Mm-hmm. And I had an instructor tell me, you know, the short, shallow breaths. Because I always go in, as soon as I get into like a winded mode, and most people do, the breaths become very short, very shallow.
Yeah.
And you got to train your body to big, long, deep breaths because you're getting more oxygen in.
Exactly.
It's filling up. And you can do that, but it's always like, for me, it's a struggle. As soon as I get to that point where I'm starting to, you know, kind of push myself, I just revert into that short, shallow. And I wonder why that is. I don't know why my brain thinks that a short, shallow breath's good when I know.
See, that would be your medulla oblongata, telling you that you don't have enough oxygen in your... Well, it's just the fact that it's just maybe just not used to having that, you know, requirement.
Right.
Right, in general, yeah. Right? If you're not necessarily doing that all the time, I mean, and I know you're a pretty fit guy, right?
Yeah, I try to get to gym exactly, every now and then, exactly, so, yeah, no.
Right? So
check my Facebook profile.
But your body is still kind of getting used to it. Like I noticed, like I do construction kind of sort of on it. And so I was shoveling the other day and kind of noticing how I wasn't out of breath. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of one of those odd, like realizing that, you know, back in the day, I would have been out of breath shoveling and carrying a wheelbarrow and hauling stuff around all day. But I've apparently worked myself now to the point where I'm actually pretty comfortable hauling around 100-pound blocks worth of, you know, and carrying a wheelbarrow, and my body seems to react not too bad to it, despite the asthma, despite whatever else might be going on.
Right? Is that your phone?
Apparently. So yeah, so there's a lot of consequences of not taking proper breaths. And I it's one of those things that if you don't actually think about it, that's kind of why I wanted to talk about it today, was because it's one of those things that you don't think about a lot. You don't think about what the actual proper way of breathing is, whether there is a proper way, and what the actual, you know, the actual like real life consequences of not breathing properly is. Mm-hmm. They've shown that the only way of actually making your brain cells regenerate is through aerobic exercise.
Right. You got to get oxygen in there, right?
Exactly. And that's what it all comes down to. The more blood you pump into your brain, the more it can grow. Mm-hmm. Right. And so if you get half an hour of exercise every day, that's the only thing that they've actually shown that actually makes your brain cells regenerate.
So I do it every day.
So doing shallow breathing would actually contribute to your brain cells not working properly by not having the proper amount of oxygen.
Also, from experience, also makes your muscles not work properly.
Exactly, for sure, because your muscles also require that.
Then everything gets really tired really quick.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Big, deep breaths, very people. Quickly. You're doing cardio, you want big, if you're at the gym right now,
you'd probably pass out, wouldn't you? I mean, if you worked yourself and you were taking the short, shallow breaths without you know, actually training yourself to be able to take the proper breaths, you'd probably pass out.
Yeah. In fact, you mentioned earlier where you can't physically like stop yourself from breathing because, and my daughter tries, I'm gonna hold my breath.
It shuts your brain off. And
your brain's like, okay, screw you. Yeah. You're out. I'm going to take over. So you pass out and then the brain kicks over and you start breathing again because you're unconscious.
And I've only ever actually, I believe I passed out once.
I've never passed out. I think. I never once passed out in my life. Like, you know, other than from alcohol, you know, there was a tequila incident that happened recently.
One or two.
One tequila incident. I passed out, but I don't remember a lot.
Yeah. Oh, no. Tequila's. See, it's just, you have to be responsible with tequila. You have to recognize that tequila wants to bring all of his friends along. And tequila loves being mixed with everything. And that's the problem. And tequila does not mix well.
I had tequila at the end of the night when I was down in the Dominican partying. I don't remember anything after drinking it. Mm-hmm. Like I had a couple shots and...
Thank God your brain breathes for you, hey?
Yes, so, thank you God
that
for that.
One of those times that your brain would just like, okay, dude, you're done.
Apparently my brain did a lot of other things too that I was not aware of. Yeah. And there's pictures of.
Yeah. Well, and see, like the brain actually uses 20% of all of the oxygen that you use anyway. So all of the oxygen that you're breathing in, your brain is using 20% of that, minimum. Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know about minimum, but...
Mine's probably using at least 20% because I'm smart.
At least. For sure.
Always thinking.
Yeah.
Just thinking about the next big thing.
Well, and with the exercising, you know, you're able to be thinking more.
Yeah, for
you're
sure.
To do more thinking and deeper thinking.
Making myself super smart. I listen to podcasts and books while I'm working out because I expand my mind while expanding my body.
Excellent. Well, there you go. Well, and it also, so it not only helps with the brain, but it helps your heart because the constantly active... your heart it beats about 100,000 times in a single day, right? So it uses up a huge amount of oxygen, and a shortage means the heart can't pump out blood as effectively, which leads to bad circulation, which can lead to like your hands and feet going numb, cold.
Working out is so important, man. I mean, I see so many like older people that just are older than they look older than they should. And man,
and both of us come from having been fat.
Yeah. I used to be fat. I used to be super fat.
I used to be fat as well.
I used to be a tubby dude.
Yeah. I used to be about 300 pounds and I'm now down about 220.
Yeah. I'm about 205 right now.
And now I'm at the point where it's tough because I come from that family where, you know, all of us have that kind of issue where it's a struggle, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And because we have an endothermic, we tend to store more energy than we use, right?
Yeah.
So this is why I have the you know, construction hard work kind of job is mm-hmm. because I hate going to the gym. Mm-hmm. And so part of it was for me, I knew that I needed to have something that I could go to work and be able to
Going to the gym. Like I used to hate it.
I love working, right? And that's
awesome.
Like,
yeah, that's awesome that you do. I mean, you got to find what works for you. Like I used to hate going to the gym. Like mm-hmm. I used to have to force myself to go. Now I literally have to force myself not to go. Mm-hmm. I'm like, I mm-hmm. need a day off. I've been to the gym every single day.
They talk about a runner's high. Right, yeah. Where you know, after a while of running, you get that, you know, euphoria.
Yeah, euphoria, right? Yeah, for sure. I have it where, it's like me time. Like I got an hour of just me time. I
see, that's the effect of oxygen on the brain.
Yeah,
right?
They've
shown that it helps with depression. They've mm-hmm. shown the benefits to it are yeah. so many, you know, various things that yeah. come from just a small amount of exercise, right?
You look good, mm-hmm. you know, you're working out and your muscles are bigger.
Right? Again, it helps with depression, it helps with your brain, just, you know, being able to work better in general.
Yeah, and being a fat guy, like most of my life, like I was a fat guy from mm-hmm. like 20 to almost 40,
yeah.
you know? And I remember one time I like, was at the gym, you know how the gyms have all the mirrors there, right? And it was a crowded gym. And my brain was like, hey, we're looking at the mirrors. And like my brain picked out like there's something not right. Like there's someone standing there that's actually not there. And it was me. Like I looked at it and I'm like, oh, the fuck, that's me. Like, holy shit, I look like this. Like seriously, that literally like happened. I don't want to brag or anything, but that literally happened. Like my brain was like, who's that person? Like there's someone there that's like, and I focused, like it startled me for a second. I'm like, what's going on?
See, and everyone should have that moment in their life when they can look at the you know, their past self. And just look in the mirror and go, holy crap, that's who I am now? Wow. Yeah. Right?
Mm-hmm. Follow me on Instagram, MarshallP26. You can see all my before and after pictures on there. I post them often. Because I like that gratification.
Now, here's another one. Did you actually know that bad breathing can actually lead to crooked teeth?
Bad breathing? I did not even know that at all.
Because apparently you're not really supposed to breathe through your mouth. You're supposed to constantly mm-hmm. breathe through your nose mm-hmm. because breathing through your mouth, you lose a lot of moisture. It also leads to dry mouth, which is one of the contributors to bad breath.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
also causes your teeth to rot. It leads to a lot of different kind of problems.
I have that issue because I used to have bad allergies when I was a kid
mm-hmm.
and my nose was constantly clogged and I breathed through my mouth a lot and I had a lot of plaque buildup when I was younger. And the doctor and the dentist said, well, it's because you breathe through your mouth most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
But I know it caused crooked teeth.
I mean, that might be something that they're, you know, they're
moving
just
shit around.
Starting to, well, again, I think it's more just that your mouth might be in a different position when it's open versus when it's closed. And so it might lead to you're having more movement in your, right? And kind of craniofacial abnormalities.
Craniofacial abnormalities.
Indeed. That's the
first
long,
time I've ever many, heard many, that combination of words before. Bravo, sir.
I'm just reading off the screen. So.
Oh, okay. Those were your words. All right, fine.
Craniofacial. Like, I just totally came up with that. That's just off the top of my head.
You should have been thank you. Yeah, I was trying to come up with the right terminology.
That, as a matter of fact. Wow, yeah. Look how smart I am. as I'm telling you to look at me on the podcast. Yep, that's my genius, indeed. Yeah, so you're supposed to breathe through the nose because the nose actually filters out a lot of the stuff in the air as well, right?
Nostril hair.
Yeah.
So which I keep trimmed. Thank you, ladies.
which you have to keep trim.
You got to keep trim, man.
Or you'd be chewing on them all the time. So. which nobody wants to see. So.
Put an image in my head I don't want to have.
That's why you have to trim them. Yes, yes. But so it actually filters all the bacteria and viruses and also moisturizes the air as it goes down, when you breathe through your mouth, it actually doesn't do. It actually draws moisture from, right? So you want to breathe in for the diaphragm. That's the other thing. A lot of people breathe into their shoulders. That's one of, like, as a singer, that's one of the first things I ask people to do is to just take a breath and just watch their body when they take a breath, right? If you tighten up your shoulders, that constricts your throat, which means that you're not able to get a full breath. You want to breathe mm-hmm. down into your diaphragm, into your stomach, essentially. Start there and then expand your lungs, right? Because that gives you a lot more volume to work with.
Right.
Versus constricting and tightening up, right? Yeah, so your breathing muscles consist of the diaphragm and the muscles in the abdomen, chest, neck, and shoulders. So your shoulders and neck are actually part of that whole whole thing. But I think that's, you want to kind of use it more for the settling down of your lungs versus the pulling in of air.
I'm breathing now and testing my muscles to see where they go. And yeah, I guess, you know, you move your shoulders
Yeah, because that helps to expand. So yeah, your shoulder everyone breathe muscles, at home. I believe. Yeah, exactly.
You're sitting at the car and everyone take a big breath.
I highly recommend everyone to just take a deep breath.
Your shoulders go back, for sure.
And just, you know, take a few deep breaths. Like, take 10 deep breaths and just try them in different ways. Try taking a breath into your diaphragm. Try taking a breath into your chest. Try taking a breath where you lift your clavicle up and just see what feeling the tightness of your shoulders feels when you breathe in and how it constricts and how you can't take a full breath, right? I try it out. Because, again, it's one of those things you just kind of take for granted. Yeah. But it really is intrinsic to our life and a big part of who we are and how our bodies work. Right. Mm-hmm. And without that, you know, you're really, you know, losing a good portion of how your body is supposed to be operating. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it really does us, you know, a good thing to actually, you know, take a look at how we breathe and what the proper way of breathing is.
And even with meditation, breathing is like critically important, right?
It's one of the main parts of meditation, in fact, right? Is just learning, because that's part of the focus, right? Is learning to, because that's when you tune everything else out, when you shut all of the stuff in your brain out, the only thing that you're left with is your breath, because that's the only thing that you can't technically shut off. Well, I mean, you can shut out, you know, like not your heart and blah, 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 but you can't technically hear your heart when you're meditating, right? Yeah. What you can kind of hear is your breathing, right? So 70% of the inhaling, 70 to 80% of the inhaling should be done with the diaphragm so that your breathing is nice and deep. This has a couple of advantages. It helps your lungs with the gas exchange, which is much more effective way down in the lungs. So apparently your lungs are more effective the deeper you breathe. So that's where also helping with the shallow breathing, right? Like the shallow breath, you're actually not effectively using your lungs to begin with.
When doctors, I had a doctor or a girlfriend who was going through it for a doctor long time ago, did a test on me. Mm-hmm. And she said, my lower lungs, I'm not incorporating. I don't. Like, I always had a hard time with the long distance running because of my breathing.
Yeah.
And I've since, you know, change. But yeah, so that's what they do. They listen to the upper part of your lungs with the stethoscope. And then they listen to the bottom to see if you're getting oxygen in there. And a lot of people don't get oxygen into the lower part of their lungs.
And if you watch kids run, right? And if you watch a kid, like if they've gone for a long run and you watch them take a breath, you see that they breathe in their stomach.
Yeah.
That's kind of instinctively what we do. And it's only as we grow up, like it's kind of movies. You watch people take a breath in a movie and you watch their shoulders move because that looks better.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so as a director, you want to have that movement and you want to see someone take a breath and go, right. And lift their shoulders up to show that they're having a big breath. Right. Mm-hmm. When in actual fact, when you take a big breath, you're breathing into your diaphragm, but it doesn't look as good. So you don't see it. Right. But actually taking that breath with your diaphragm actually massages your liver, stomach, and intestines. And gives those organs a rhythmic balance. So the movement of your breath actually helps your liver and your stomach to actually move stuff through you.
That's interesting. Right? I didn't even consider that to be something.
Right? Again, one of those things that you don't really think about, that movement would actually be part of your actual, your system working, right? It also helps with the lymphatic system, which is important for our immune system.
Mm-hmm.
It gets the help it needs to get rid of the waste products. So again, that movement would help to move the waste out, right? The pressure in the chest and belly is decreased so that the heart doesn't have to work as hard. So by opening up your chest, you're allowing more movement of the blood, I believe. More effective muscle work, as the wrong breathing muscles won't have to do unnecessary work. So you're not having to work muscles that aren't generally used for breathing, right? But are instead using the muscles that are specifically designed for breathing. Right, which gives it better, more effective.
Mm-hmm. More effective stuff.
Yeah, exactly. So, and as the chest gets more relaxed, so do the neck and shoulders. And as a result, the likelihood of pain in those areas goes down, right? So again, if you're breathing into your shoulders a lot, you would develop that tightness in your shoulders.
Yeah, right? Sure.
Whereas breathing into your diaphragm, it's more natural movement, so you're not tightening up and you're causing that extra stress on your system. So from there, right, I mean, it's basically just a matter of, again, kind of being aware of your breathing. Your brain will take care of it for you, right?
Yeah.
Literally, you can't shut yourself off.
Yeah. You can't stop breathing. You can't hold your breath till you die.
Yeah.
No, regardless of what your daughter might tell you. Not gonna happen.
they may try it. Kids,
you know, they'll try it for
they
sure.
Love that. They love that.
Give it a shot.
Right? Like, oh, you tell me I can't. Oh, just watch me.
They may pass out, but they're not gonna die.
They probably will pass out. So we hope that this will help you to take control of your breathing, use your oxygen a little more efficiently, and make your brain a little smarter.
Bigger, deeper breaths.
It really, you know, they call it the breath of life because it really, really is. And if you're not using it properly, then you're not being.
Yeah, for sure. But we also want to hear from you guys on what's going on. So if you do want to add to the conversation, by all means, we're on Facebook at Learn Me Something.
There's tons of books and articles that we'd love to, you know, continue the research on this. I'm sure there's new things they found. You know, we talked about with the meditation that we were mentioning and how it actually increases the folds of your brain when we were talking about the dendrites last time. And how that actually increases the folds of your brain for meditation and it allows you to, right? So whether pumping that oxygen into your blood or into your brain in general might increase folds or increase the surface area of your brain just by, you know, allowing more brain cells, right?
Breathing is important. So yeah, reach out to us on Facebook at Learn Me Something. We're also on Twitter at Learn Me Something Pod.
Yes.
And that's all we have right now. So you better get Twitter and you better get Facebook if you want to reach out to us.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Have a great week, and we'll talk to you soon. Floriant Dendrite.
See you on next Friday, guys.
You've been listening to Learn Me Something with Aaron Stewart and Rich Plum on Hologram Radio. If you like the podcast, please rate and subscribe in iTunes and share it with a friend. To find other interesting podcasts like this one, please visit our website at hologramradio.org.